Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey there, I'm Grant Wall. Welcome to the Planet Football Podcast. This week's interview guest is Aaron West. He's one of my favorite people in the American soccer community. He co-hosted Fox Sports' nightly digital show during the Women's World Cup, and you can see him now co-hosting the Crossroads 8-part series of Premier League What Ifs on the NBC Sports YouTube page. While we've got you, make sure to check out Planet Football TV, SI's weekly soccer video series that I co-host with Luis Miguel Echegaray. We've got interviews, debate, and thoughtful opinions on the game we love. That's Planet Football TV. Onward! The breakout star of the Women's World Cup this summer was Rose Lavelle, and I get that. Rose had a great tournament, scored in the World Cup final. But for me, there was more than one breakout star of the Women's World Cup. And my friend Aaron West joins us now in studio here in New York. Aaron, congratulations on everything you did with Fox on the digital show, which was really cool. And you got more than a million viewers in a night on at least one occasion, maybe multiple ones.
I appreciate
but
that.
Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Yeah.
I love this office. I feel very comfortable right now. I'm just going to hang out after we finish.
Our podcast studio actually is kind of nice. We got stuff up, posters of LeBron. Clint Dempsey is the soccer member up here. I know Clint's retired, so.
He's probably fishing right now.
Honestly, probably so.
It's probably a little bit late. It's a little bit hot now. The fish are probably not jumping, so he's probably already fished and is now like at home watching the news or something. I don't know, maybe we should get Rose Lavelle up in here. We should.
But I want to talk about just have a conversation because I think you're a really interesting guy, and
thank you.
It was really cool getting to know you more this summer as you were working for Fox. I was working for Fox at the World Cup, but I want to get kind of your soccer story to start with, because here's what I know about you. You're sitting here right now in a Lyon jersey, by the way.
I felt like it was fitting after the summer. It felt like a good jersey to wear today.
I like it. But I always associate you with Juventus, and I know you played, and what's your story?
Yeah, so I was introduced to soccer. I was born and raised in North Carolina in Chapel Hill. I was introduced to soccer by my mom's best friend, who has since passed away. May she rest in peace. But when I was 3 years old, my older brother, I have one older brother, was six. I was three, so he was old enough to play organized soccer. I was not. But as soon as I was rolled a soccer ball and saw it in action, I fell in love. So I would go to my brother's training sessions and like kick around like at their practices. And then when I was four, I started organized, which was basically just a bunch of kids chasing a ball. But I was hooked. Growing up in North Carolina in the 90s, we didn't have cable until 2002 when I begged my parents to get it for the World Cup. Right. But before that, I basically existed on highlight tapes and reading, which is partially why I love writing so much, because I read amazing writing my entire life. 442 magazine, every single soccer publication in the U.S. that existed, Soccer Junior on up.
Nice.
So I would, every single thing in the written word, I'd go to Barnes & Noble, and every single glossy soccer magazine that my parents would let me buy, I'd buy the books. I grew up on Ajax highlight tapes, which is how I fell in love with Ajax and Holland. And then in 97, I was about to turn 13, and I was like really serious about the game. I just started playing select when I was 12. I thought I was pretty good, and like was really, really serious about soccer. And that's when I decided I'm gonna pick a team and I'm gonna stick with it for life. Like, this is gonna be my team forever. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I grew up watching Ajax highlight tapes. That was like, visually, that was what I basically lived on.
Okay.
Just watching Ajax over and over. And my friend's parents got the Ajax highlight tape from the 96 final when Juve beat Ajax, and I was like enthralled. I saw the black and white, I saw the blue with the yellow shoulders. I researched a lot about Juve. I was like, I really like this team. Edgar Davids had just signed. Thierry Henry was, I believe, at the time he was at Juve. I love this team. This is going to be my team. So I was all in. It didn't matter that I didn't speak the language. I couldn't watch them. I was like, I can't watch any team. So this, I'll just follow them anyway. And I'm like a very stubborn person. So just like through everything, I was like, I'm a Juve person. So when I was like 12, 13, it was 97. I picked Juve in 98. The next year, I was like, oh, I follow this game. I realized that it's, like, there's a lot of different leagues, and it was a very American thing. I was like, there's not that much crossover. I love Henri had just moved to Arsenal, mm-hmm. and I was like, I love this team. I really like a lot of their players. There were a lot of black players, a lot of guys that looked like me, a lot of guys that loved Henri. So I was like, Arsenal will be my second team. And then in my head, I was like, all right, so if anyone asks me, Juve over everything, but also I love Arsenal. And that's kind of how I've like approached it. So if ever Juve plays Arsenal, it was like, okay, I'm supporting Juve just barely, but almost never. It never happened. So I never really had to worry about that. So just since I was 12, just stubbornly, like, I'm going to pick this team and stick with it. And I'm 33. I'll be 33 in a week. So
okay,
I'm still stubborn.
I was going to say, like, to have Arsenal play Juve would require that Arsenal make Champions League.
Yeah, so early on, this was a possibility, and now it just doesn't exist.
And did you play in college?
Yeah, so I played at Davidson College, and a little bit, like, for about 2 weeks afterwards, I was like I tried with the Charlotte Eagles, got hurt. I got an offer from another team in North Carolina, the Wilmington Hammerheads, that I don't believe exists anymore.
Sad.
And it was a very, very, it was very little money, and I was perpetually injured throughout. Like, I was always hurt. I broke my back when I was 15.
Oh, wow.
And that was one of hundreds of injuries, muscular. Like, I was like Usman Dembele, but, like, worse, and had no idea. Maybe he's worse because he understands how to take care of his body. I had no idea how to take care of my body. My freshman year at Davidson, our trainer told me, he was like, you're going to get injured, like, 3 or 4 times a year because you were not really built to play this sport. You were built to be a sprinter, and you play like a sprinter, so you're going to get hurt a lot. And he was right. He was not wrong at all.
Oh, no.
But so I just, after college, I, like, tried to play in USL and probably could have made a decent career out of it, but I was just like, I don't like being hurt. I don't actually enjoy training. I loved playing games, but I didn't enjoy training. I don't really like being outside that much, and I enjoy pickup way more than I actually enjoy training. So all those contributed to me deciding to go for a regular job. And so I started working in social media. Right out of college, I worked for an education outreach company, like, as an intern. A couple of Davidson grads had started it. Hmm. Enjoyed working there, and then the bank collapse happened. Mm-hmm. And so I lost my job there, and then just started, like, over the next few years, kind of cycling through trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And it all kept circling back to soccer because it was really the only thing I cared about.
Okay.
So I worked in social media for a few different companies, marketing. I tried to be a coach. And then it was just all cycling around, like, coming back to soccer while I was still kind of freelance writing on the side, and was kind of putting all of my eggs in the coaching basket because I was like, I don't like working. And soccer is really the only thing I care about. And writing was hard. It was very difficult. I did, like, some freelance writing, but couldn't really find anything secure. And I was like, I have a girlfriend and I want to start a life and I want to make money. I've never cared about money, but, like, I was like, I have to at least eat.
Yeah.
So I went down the coaching route, started to get my badges. And then in 2016, I got the offer to go write for Fox, which kind of changed everything. That, like, made this industry a real avenue for me.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of put me on the map in terms of working for a legitimate outlet, being able to get my views across to a bigger audience. And that's kind of just what catapulted it. I was at Fox for about a year and a half. And when they pivoted to video,
firing all their writers, yes, in the process.
Yes. They made the big industry shift to pivot to video. And all of the writers across sports from Fox were let go. And I actually immediately, it was one of those really cool moments in my life where, like, I've had a lot of ups and downs, but it was, like, the coolest thing where the day that we all got let go, I was actually in Portland with my then girlfriend, now wife,
Yael Averbuch.
Yeah, Yael Averbuch. So I was there with her because they were playing against Portland, so I was like going to hang out with her for the, I think, a couple days, just a couple days. And so we got the news that everyone was being let go, and I was like, all right, well, I'm not actually in the office, so this is kind of nice to not have to be there. And I told my wife, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to take a day or two. I'm just going to be really sad. I'm going to be in my feelings, process this, and then like I'll get back on the job hunt like in a couple days. We found out the news early afternoon, and then around like 5 or 6, I like tweeted out, it's like, I had a great time at Fox, kind of along the lines, like, had a great time at Fox, learned a lot. That's the bad, the good news. Learned a lot, but I'm no longer there. The good news is you can now hire me. And I was like, and I just like kind of closed my phone, and it started like buzzing. I was like, what is going on? And there was interest.
Yeah.
And it really surprised me at the time. I was like, oh, people actually resonated with my work. And which is, you see that a lot, but then when you're kind of head down in the internet,
right,
you see a lot of negative comments and you think you're doing good work, but you're never really sure. but it felt really good to kind of like be validated. And I quickly moved to COPPA, and then with a view to kind of change their voice on social media. They had started out as Kick TV with kind of like a lot of dad humor, like a lot of like broad kind of American soccer humor. And then they wanted me to kind of come in and modernize it, update it for the modern soccer fan, which is what they wanted to cater to. So I worked on their social media, did some writing for explainers, and with a view to do more video work. So I started doing more video work, and it felt comfortable. It felt good. And
you're
so
good
I did
at
more.
It.
And I did
you
more.
Good
yeah. So it evolved into like from mainly social media and writing and some on camera work to mainly on camera and some social media, and then like some mainly just on camera and some writing. And it just, it's since I've started doing the on camera work, it's been interesting because I really do enjoy it. I like my dream job. I was just asked a couple days ago like what my dream job was, and I was like, a year and a half or 2 years ago I would have told you it was what I was doing, writing. Like I get to write about soccer. Like my job is talking about this game that I love, and I don't have to talk to anyone face to face. Sometimes I do interviews, which is great, but I don't have to like go out and talk to people all the time. It's like, this is amazing. But now I'm an on-camera person, so it's been an interesting shift, but I really enjoy it. Again, I get to talk about soccer all the time. So what is there not to enjoy? But it's been a fun shift to like kind of the other side of the camera instead of just writing for things like that. But
I want to hear the Buffon story, because when you were at Copa 90, as obviously a big Juve guy, you end up interviewing one of the great Juventus players of all time. How did that come together?
So we were in the office, and my producer like walks up, and he's like, so we have an opportunity. And I was like, oh, what is it? Opportunities pop up all the time. Some of them are really cool. Some of them are small. And I'm like, I'm excited about everything. So I'm like, oh, what is it? He was like, you maybe want to go to Italy and interview Buffon. And I was like, I like dropped. I don't know what I was holding, but I dropped it. And I was like, please don't mess with me. And I said some unsavory words. I was like, don't play with me. Like, this is not a thing to mess with my feelings about. Don't do that. So basically, it was an opportunity with Puma for the release of their Azzurri jersey, the brand new one, to interview Buffon. It was in Italian. And I kind of understand Italian. I understand Italian from like years of following Juve, reading blogs, listening to the games in Italian, especially during the Serie B years when there was like no coverage in English.
Right.
So I like have a cursory understanding. If you speak it to me, I understand it. And I can say a few words in Italian. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's do this. So we sourced all the questions. We got them translated from Italian. But we like had like kind of an ongoing conversation in Italian. I think I blacked out the entire time. but he's just such a nice guy. Like when he walked, it was like in a big hotel suite in Turin. And so I was in like a back room kind of waiting. It was a little bit of a car wash. So there were a couple different people before us, but it was an extended interview. So when he walks in, he's just got like this booming voice. You hear it in the stadium, you hear it on TV, but like he walked in this room and he goes, "Buongiorno," and like the entire room like fills with his voice, and it's like, oh my God, Gigi Buffon is really here. And he's just the nicest guy. He's so genial. He treats everyone like they're super important, looks you right in the eyes. He speaks a little bit of English, but I like tried to speak my little bit of Italian, and he was just like so nice and disarming. charming. It like felt like a normal interview. Huh. And like when I watched it back, I was like, whoa, this looks like we're friends. This is crazy. How did he make me feel that comfortable? But he was just such a nice guy, and like it went perfectly. And it couldn't have gone any better. And at the end, I was like, oh my God, I just interviewed Gigi Buffon. And then I was like feeling on top of the world. We got back from Italy and I woke up I opened up my Snapchat to like a bunch of messages from my friends. Just like, all my friends are amazing people. They're like, if ever I become legitimately famous, I will never have to worry about my head getting too big, because they will always keep me and bring me down to earth. I like just woke up to like pages and pages of roasts. Like, this man interviewed his idol looking like a backup Duke point guard. Like, he really wore pajama pants to interview Gigi Buffon. Like, it was just like page after page, just absolutely eviscerating me. It was fantastic.
Awesome. I mean, I would also think too that like, as time goes on and you've done new things, so like as when you started doing video and realized, oh, I can do this, mm-hmm. or did you have a situation like where you thought, if I can interview Buffon and produce some good stuff out of it, I can basically interview anybody?
Yeah, it was one of those moments where I was like, I just interviewed Gigi Buffon in Italian. I feel really good about this. Like, I was very new in doing it, but like that was a really crazy situation, and it felt like comfortable and it felt good. So it was kind of one of those moments where I was like, oh, this is like a thing I can do. I enjoy this. This might be fun. it was a big moment where I was like, oh, this could be my thing.
So were there other things with Copa 90, like the Buffon interview, that really sort of you think about when you think about your time at Copa 90?
Yeah, honestly, we had a lot of amazing access, and we got put in a lot of really, really cool situations with players that aren't like very traditional, where we were able to kind of get things out of players where I think a lot of traditional outlets maybe wouldn't. Going to training sessions, going to places where literally you can just roll a ball to a player. I look like them. So I automatically have like two legs up on a lot of other people. Who might be doing an interview. So I use that, especially if there's a soccer ball around. Or sure. Like I did a shot challenge with Tyler Adams kind of early on, and it was one of those things where I didn't know him, he didn't know me, but I can roll a soccer ball and pass, and we talk, and in 5 minutes, like we're cool, because I talk about off camera, like those little moments that you get with someone before the lights are on, and before they're like under pressure to say things properly and could be screwed for the rest of their lives. Those little moments to kind of let someone know that, I want to be friends with you. Like, honestly, I don't even view myself as a journalist. I just want to tell stories accurately especially about people that I believe in. I think journalism is interesting because there's a lot of like, we try to not be biased, but there's some bias everywhere. I think it's important to not shy away from that. The fact that I have bias and then announce it up front. Like, I have a bias. I like this person. I'm trying to be truthful with the story I'm telling, but I do like this person. But kind of circling back to the original, like, we got put in a lot of very cool situations at Copa, mm-hmm. Very unique ones and like fun situations, which is a lot of players knew that they were going to have fun, which, when a player knows that it's going to be a serious interview versus a fun one, like, it's always better. So I got the chance to have a lot of fun with a lot of different footballers that I watch on a regular basis.
Nice. And in the parable of modern media, Copa 90 decided to pivot.
I just spilled my water. Yes. Yes, they did. Yes. So at the beginning of, towards the end of last year, the beginning of this year, the UK side kind of decided to pivot away from the American side, at least for content. It had kind of shifted. We'd kind of seen it coming. There was a shift of more branded content over kind of the creative content we wanted to produce more of. Mm-hmm. Telling, rather than just telling stories, it was telling stories for a brand. Which you have to make money. I understand that, but I think it's a very dangerous game. Media is so hard. Like, you have to sell enough ads to be able to make the stuff that you want to make, and then sometimes it can turn to just selling ads. And that's kind of, I think that's basically what just happened. But yeah, so the beginning of this year, they decided to part with the American content team, and I went freelance, and I've been enjoying it, actually. I obviously did the Women's World Cup, which was one of the greatest experiences of my life alongside you. Yeah. That was an amazing time. Standing in front of the Eiffel Tower was so surreal.
It didn't seem real.
Like, I was telling someone yesterday, it was like two-week stages. It was like the first 2 weeks was, I can't believe I'm standing in front of the Eiffel Tower. The second 2 weeks was like, oh my God, this is just work. Like, we're working in front of the Eiffel Tower. Like, yes, that's the Eiffel Tower, but we're working here. This is crazy. How are we working in front of the Eiffel Tower? And then the last 2 weeks was, wow, we're not going to be doing this much longer. I'm working in front of the Eiffel Tower, and I won't be, like, this is amazing. How am I still doing this? I'm not going to be doing this much longer. I'm going to savor it. So it was like, it was a little bit of transition over the 6 weeks we were there.
And it went by quickly. What I like is that, and I think there's something, we have a fair number of listeners who are students who want to become professional sports media people. Mm-hmm. And you've had this industry deal you some pretty negative cards that had nothing to do with the quality of your work twice. and what I think is probably a helpful lesson for everyone out there is you kept at it. And then Fox, the company that had let you go at one point, mm-hmm. ends up hiring you for this really cool job. You do an amazing job with it. And now you're doing other stuff as well. So what's the, tell people about the NBC stuff you're doing.
Yeah. So I right after I got back from the World Cup, this messed my internal clock up for like a couple weeks. Yeah. So I got back from Paris. I was in New York for 2 days, and then I flew to LA to shoot this Crossroads series for NBC. And we shot it over 1 day. So I was there for like 3 days and then went back to New York. So my internal clock was just so screwed up for a long time. Seriously. But the Crossroads series is really cool. When they pitched it, I talked to them about it. It was basically the idea is there are several pivotal moments in Premier League, just in football in general. Like, it, soccer is such an interesting sport to me because I think about this all the time. It's like a player's career can literally be changed in like an instant. Like, what if David Trezeguet misses that volley in Euro 2000? We probably don't know his name at this point.
Right.
Like, he might not get a move to a big club. He might not be a French legend. Like, what if Zinedine Zidane misses that volley? What if Arsenal don't go undefeated? And that's the episode that's actually coming out tonight. Nice. But it's little moments like that, or big moments in the Premier League, some very serious ones, some comical ones, like when Tottenham's entire, like 10 of their first team squad got food poisoning. Mm-hmm. What would happen in history if they didn't get food poisoning, if they win the match the next day? Maybe Gareth Bale doesn't leave. Maybe Luka Modric doesn't leave. Maybe Michael Carrick doesn't leave. Maybe Spurs would have won a title by now. Like, these are little moments that there are eight separate ones in this Crossroads series that we kind of go through the history. This is what happened. And then we kind of go through a little bit of fun. Like, what if? Mm-hmm. What if Gerrard didn't slip?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a few moments that'll hurt a couple different fan bases. The Arsenal one is a good one because it actually did happen. They did go undefeated. So if we had to go down the other road, I would probably be hurt. but we get a little bit of positive memories as Arsenal fans today. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a really, really fun series. I had a lot of fun shooting it. And it's cool to just kind of be able to do different things like this in the space. Like, 2019 is so interesting to me. Like, our world's going to probably burn up, but I get to talk about soccer. So it's like I have conflicting feelings all the time. Like,
I'm laughing, but I'm not.
Yeah. It's like we there may be someone somewhere in an office in Washington, D.C. who could push a button and do away with this all. But I woke up and watched soccer today for my job. So there's a lot of positives and a lot of negatives.
Oh, shoot. It's been an amazing year for you. You got married.
Yeah.
You had these very cool jobs that you're doing. Tell me a little bit about what it's like to be married to a soccer player.
It is amazing because, like I told you, for the longest time, I care about more things now, but for the longest time, mainly the only thing I cared about was soccer. And so I would talk about it a lot. And I ingested it a lot, and I'm just, it's my world. So for me to be with someone who loves it as fully as I do, she loves it in different ways. She doesn't watch nearly as much soccer as I do because she actually has a more intensive job that she has to do stuff. She is the president of the NWSL Players Association and has her own business, so she can't just sit around and watch soccer all day like I do. But she played. She understands the game. I can talk to her about intricacies of the game, not just, oh, did you see the score? Mm. Like, I'll pause my day and, like, run over and show her a highlight, and we'll, like, goo-goo-gaga over it. Like, we'll go crazy over it. She'll, like, she's better technically than me as a footballer. So it's just, like, little cool things that I am super invested in this sport. And to have someone that is just as invested, if not more, and, like, two feet down in it, that cares about advancing the sport in this country as well as much as I do, is an amazing feeling.
So knowing that you played at Davidson in a certain time frame, there's two other people's names that always come to my mind. One is a guy that we had on the podcast several months ago, Clint Smith.
Yeah.
You know Clint, don't you?
I know Clint very well. I am the one that recruited Clint. He was my recruit at Davidson, and I did everything I could to coerce him just because. So basically, I got every black recruit at Davidson because I was the only black guy in my class.
Okay.
And Davidson is very small, and it's not that many minorities. So, like, I was very happy to take this on, and I made it a point. Like, if I got a black recruit, he was going to Davidson.
Nice.
So
what was your success rate?
Yeah, I got every single black recruit that ever came to me.
No way.
Yeah, so we had a Clint's class, I think there were four black guys, all of them who came to me in the recruitment process. Yeah, four. So I was very proud of that. Clint came. Every black person at Davidson that I knew, I showed him, which was every black person on campus. I showed him the greatest of the campus. And as soon as he committed, I shot him with an airsoft gun. I was like, we have you now. You're mine. So I feel very proud of my contribution in getting Clint Smith to Davidson. I love that kid. He's a great guy.
He is a total star, and I loved his all caps soccer tweets during the
He stole that from me, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, he did. No, steal. I didn't that know from that. Me.
Oh, you can. This is actually, like, we joke about this a lot. Like, because we're in a group chat together with a bunch of, like, friends from Davidson and beyond, and I would, long time ago, would tweet in all caps, and he would do it too, and then I, like, did it for a while, and he kind of latched onto it for the last year. Was it the last World Cup?
He did some during Russia.
I think it was during Russia was when it, like, really kicked on. And his brother, it was the funniest thing, is, like, his brother texted me, and he goes, Clint's really running with your all cap style, isn't he? I was like, oh, yes, I'm sending this to him because it's proof, incontrovertible proof.
Royalties are owed, Clint.
That is the only thing I will say he stole from me. He did not steal the poetry or the writing ability. It's just the all cap soccer tweeting. I won't take credit for anything else.
He got some pretty good engagement on those tweets during the tournament. And he's got a wonderful poem in this 1619 project that just came out last weekend in the Times, which I suggest everyone read. I actually...
An incredible writer.
I stole the print version of that from my mother-in-law's New York Times just because...
It's a worthy theft.
But yeah, I figured that's okay, right?
Yeah, that's fine. That's completely fine.
I'll co-sign that one. Magazine. Check it out. The other person I think of those years at Davidson, Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Did you come into contact with him there?
Yeah, so Davidson is very small. I think it's up to like 21 or 2,200 now, but when I was there, it was like 1,700. Like a quarter of that are athletes, and so it's tiny. So when Steph came in, he's 2 years behind me. I was injured, as always, so I was in the training room, and I met him there, and he was just like, you would have never known, like, He was highly recruited to Davidson, obviously didn't early what was it was a walk on would have been a walk on at Virginia Tech, but, like, we knew he was a good player.
Yeah.
So he was, but super, super humble, like, introduced himself, like, he said, "Hi, I'm Steph." Like, he was a nerdy kid. Like, he's a nerd. He's a Davidson kid. We're all nerds. Like, no one can pretend anyone from Davidson is not a nerd. We are all nerds. So he was, like, he came in, he was smaller. Like, he grew a lot during college. Like, he was quiet. He was always been quiet. Super nice guy. Always been a super nice guy, but just, like, a regular guy. And then, like, I remember he introduced himself, and then like two, three days later, like in a preseason game, he dropped like 30-something points, and I was like, "Oh, this kid's good, huh?" Yeah. And then he just went on crazy runs, but it didn't matter like if he scored 45 points or if he was in class, like he was the same person, which is a really cool thing about Davidson. There are a lot of people that are like very high functioning that you would never know; they're just normal people, which is a thing I've always been happy to see with Steph. He just seems like the same guy.
Does Steph have any soccer interest?
I think he appreciates the game. I wouldn't say he's a huge fan. I have heard him talk about the similarities, he and Steve Kerr, about like the similarities between soccer and basketball, which I think is an interesting exploration. I think for so long we've done all these like, I think people are sick of the like, oh, what if this athlete played soccer or like vice versa? But I think there are some interesting comparisons to be made, just not like lazy ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I'm totally with you on that. As we wrap up here, a couple questions to end things. One, would you have any advice for students who want to become sports media people or even soccer media people?
Yeah, I would say own your content. Always like there's kind of two sides of this. It's like always be producing. You always should be making things. I don't think that's true. I mean, take your time, like have fun, enjoy your life. I don't think you should always be head down like trying to create something, but start a blog, like start a Twitter page, let your opinion be heard, make your voice be known, because that's your voice. No one else can control that. That is your voice. You may work for an outlet, but they own that. That's their stuff. Like once you leave, that's still their stuff. Own your own voice. And I would say a lot of people kind of get head down and just being very one track minded. Be diverse. Like this is there's a whole world, and people like to see that people are in the world. They don't just talk. There's no more sticks to sports anymore. Like only people with red hats with white writing really care about that. I would say there's no real stick to sports. The world of sports is too involved in the rest of the world to kind of just stay in a bubble and think that that exists. Yeah. We're all humans in this world, and you got to act like it. I think embracing that and figuring out what you stand for is a big thing, because there's no line between sports and politics anymore. Like this world is crazy, and it's not going to get less crazy. So there's no line. So you got to understand that.
And then lastly, what do you want to do in this business? I know that's kind of a big question, but I'm curious to hear what your answer is.
I just want to keep telling the stories I think matter. I think you've done a fantastic job of kind of being a beacon for that. Like you've chased some really, really cool stories. You've gone some really cool places, uncovered some things that a lot of people would have never known. I have a different voice, but I think I kind of want to go around the same path. Like I'm not exactly sure what that path is, because this landscape is so crazy.
Right.
But I just want to keep telling the stories. That's what it is. I never really wanted to be a mouthpiece, but it's kind of fallen in my lap, so I'm here now.
Well, Aaron West, congratulations on everything you're doing, and thanks so much for joining me.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank Aaron West, as well as producer Brandon Nix, and everyone at Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Remember to check out Planet Football TV, SI's weekly soccer video series that I co-host with Luis Miguel Echegaray. We have interviews, debate, and thoughtful opinions on the game we all love. That's Planet Football TV. See you next time.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.